This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Thomas Dimitroff interviewed for the Jets job. I'm fascinated by it. I was just talking to Thomas about it, me being a Falcon fan.
So hey, you done kissing his butt? I mean, come on, jeez.
Well, we didn't get to the other part about it.
I love you.
No, I understand you. I mean, there were some things we didn't get to that maybe we could get to either during the show, but I find it fascinating. First of all, welcome in, Thomas. Thank you so much for joining us.
Can't wait to be in here. And you can ask me the tough questions. I'll raise my hand when I made the mistakes there, just so you know, on the Atlanta side, because we made some mistakes.
How can you fire Mike Smith and hire Dan Quinn? It killed me.
Okay. And you know, it's funny. Mike Smith, both of those guys were really good coaches, right? They established really well for us. It's an interesting conversation.
All right. So as it pertains to the Jets and Giants tonight, I'm fascinated by the quarterback conversation. You obviously know what you're talking about as far as this draft goes. Let's start with the Giants here. They have the number three pick. They need a franchise quarterback. Been a while. Their regime now going into year four with Shane and Dable, yet to draft their own guy and develop him. Where are you looking at this Giants organization going in the draft tonight?
You know, I sit there and I think about, we all know the quarterback situation is imperative. If I didn't pick Matt Ryan back in the day, I would have been there two years. And you know Arthur Blank, I would have been out the gate so quickly, right? We had Matt Ryan for a long time. You know about those solid sound quarterbacks. It would be great for them to have that guy to build around. How do you turn down Abdul Carter, however, when you're sitting there staring at a guy like that? He's a difference maker, pillar player. And contrast that a little bit, you know, the Shedeur Sanders idea, right? That is on my mind. And I think Shedeur has a lot of talent. And I also think that he has some challenges that he's going to have to work through as a team, right? So there's a back and forth in my mind. And I'm feeling like I'm on a fence here. Personally, I would love to trade back up into the first round if possible and secure a guy like Abdul Carter and try to find one of these other quarterbacks. We know it's not a great quarterback class. There's growing to be done there. You have to surround that quarterback, that new quarterback, with legitimate talent. The Giants are on the way. They have a hell of a receiver there, right? We love them. And what Neighbors has done, I mean, I love that.
Yep.
Personally, I think continue to build around with tight ends. I'm a huge believer in tight ends to help the young quarterbacks. We did it with Matt Ryan again, not to be retro on all this, but if we hadn't had Tony Gonzalez the next year after we drafted Matt, I don't know if Matt would have continued to ascend. It's such a big and important part.
See, I think the Giants' defense is an Abdul Carter and maybe one more player away from being borderline top 10. Because I think if you stop the run more, I think it unleashes a lot of their weapons that could get to the quarterback, which has been negated because it's always second, third, and fourth and one in short. But the Sanders comment that you just made is very interesting. You seem to think he has more talent than I do. You're also an executive, so I'll give you, I believe you, I guess is what I'm saying.
With you, yeah.
But what don't you said he's also got to work through some things. What are those things? Can you expand on that? Because he's dropping, but nobody tells us why.
Yeah, look, I think when you look at a guy like this, I mean, there are a number of things you're looking at, right? When you're talking about a quarterback, the bar is so high on everything. Character, personality, drive, intelligence. You know, he is very accurate. There are elements of his game that are really exciting to watch. And then there are other elements, like he is not the most mobile guy, right? I mean, look, I can say that about a number of other quarterbacks out there that everyone automatically assume because they're just pure natural athletes that they can be very mobile, but that's just not him. I think he comes to the table with a lot of that. I think, you know, decision-making, there are times when I think he tries to force a little because he's so damn competitive, probably coming from his dad, you know. But what I start to think about, though, you better be a strong organization i.e. general manager and head coach, to be dealing with Shedeur Sanders and co, I call it, and family. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know how incredible Deion was as an athlete. We loved watching him and everything, and we would love to see that from his son. But it carries a lot when you're coming in here, a big city like this. So I just think that you have to know, and your ownership has to know what to expect out of going into this with a first-time, you know, quarterback. Now, one thing I will say, Nick Saban said this about Julio Jones, and was one of the reasons that I was ready to make that big move that I did.
Was you from 18 or
no, 27 up?
27.
I knew it was
the world lost their mind.
You made it. I knew it was deep in the first round. I forgot how far, but you made a huge move to get up to six. Right.
It was a big. And the funniest thing was we Arthur Blank was holding my arm in arm. We were watching the video, right? So our buddy John Gruden was up there, and he had an issue with Rich McKay, our president at the time. And he showed 12 drops in a row on Julio Jones. 12. Arthur's holding my arm, and at the end, he drops his arm, and he looks at me, and I just kind of look at him, and I kind of whisper, first ballot Hall of Famer, don't let this. And there are expletives around that, too.
I'm sure.
Why was this production showing Julio Jones dropping all these things? It's a funny little aside there, but Arthur, whenever you're going after someone like that, it's important. Bring this back very quickly to Nick Saban. Nick Saban told me Julio Jones was unaffected. I do believe that Shedeur Sanders is unaffected, meaning all the pomp and circumstance, he's going to play through it. He's going to deal. He's been dealing with that all of his life. That is a positive. It can be a challenge, of course.
Now, you told us last time you were on with us, I forget what was the reason? Why were you having, there was something going on. Maybe it was Super Bowl week.
Yes.
Yeah. You said you interviewed also for the Titans job, and you told us that if you were to get that, you would trade out or you would not take Cam Ward. Explain either that or rank your quarterbacks for us going into this draft.
Explain first why I would have traded out if I were to be sitting in there. I did a lot of work on their roster, and I thought there's a ton of work that needed to be done, and there were some players in place that I thought you could build around. Levis is not one that I would have thought you're going to, leverage on, going in. But there was a side to, if the quarterbacks weren't exactly what you were looking for at the number one pick overall, the amount of booty, draft booty that you could gain by moving back 10, 5, 8 spots is legitimate there. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at it that way because I still, at that time when I had interviewed, wasn't overly positive about where I was with Cam Ward, whether he was a guy I really would want to go in to kicking off, a new organization with. That's where I was with that. And again,
did that change, by the way?
I watched a lot more on him. There is a lot that I do think is attractive, but again, I still think there are other elements to his game that are gonna take time. And if you don't have the right O-line around him, and that was the other thing.
Yeah.
Their O-line, that right side of their O-line, I think they need to continue to shore the heck out of that. And so that's going to be interesting. If you don't have a quarterback in there that has the proper O-line and the proper tools, that's a tough growth.
Right. So I guess I asked the question because I want to know if it was more about Cam Ward or more about the Titans overall. Okay, so you explained the Titans overall. Now, how do you rank the quarterbacks in this year's draft?
Well, and they're complicated, meaning it is Cam Ward, and it is Shedeur Sanders, but where that drop is one of the things that is perplexing me, right? I continue to have arguments or banter with people that I know in the business, and they're like, there's no way anyone's going to move up or take Shedeur Sanders at 9. Let's just say it's Saints, right? Yeah. That they're not going to do that. And why would they do that? Why don't they wait? There's prognosticators out there talking about Shedeur being there in the 20s. I don't believe that. I just believe that quarterback tax element is always present.
Yeah.
And if you're in, there's, I mean, we all do it. I've done it for tackles. I even call there's like a tackle tax sometimes when you need to protect the quarterback who you have a tax on as well. So I think you just have to be creative that way. So I think it's those two, and then I think there's that gap, and I do think that there's a group of those other quarterbacks. The next one, I guess it's Jackson Dart for me when I start thinking about it. Everyone around the Southeast, and you can imagine this, you bring up Milroe.
Yeah.
A great guy, really nice athlete, does all the good stuff. But if you walk down the streets of Atlanta and you get one side of the street saying everything positive about him and the other side boarding the mission at all about him, right? It's unbelievable the divide on a Alabama quarterback.
Why so? I was going to go to Jalen now, so let's go further. Why the divide? He ran a 4.37. Yep. He's 225 pounds. He comes from a military background. He's an impeccable young man. What in the world's going on with him?
That's a great point. And all those things are so positive. And that's where I think those of us who have built teams, you're like, this is a great person to have to build with.
I love him.
I think, you know, look, there are some long, deep ball things that are a concern, and there are other elements of his game that people, you know, the times that he did not pull it through for the Alabama, you know, faithful. It's just a the reason I bring that up is I wasn't sure if that's the case up here in the North, because in the South, I see someone from Alabama, I want to bring up Julio Jones, and then I want to bring up Jalen Milroe. And man, they just spin around depending on.
Thomas, I think there's more positive intrigue up here.
Yeah.
For him.
Okay.
I mean, I read athleticism to that level. You watch the film, yep. You start thinking Michael Vick, Lamar Jackson, and that to me is worth the flyer as opposed to Tyler Shuck, let's say, who may be more of a project, and that's who's rumored to be the Giants, maybe second round. The Giants so far, and maybe you could add some insight to this. It seems like Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, maybe Shedeur Sanders. For me, I'd look at Milroe. If I were a team that wanted the quarterback, I'd try to trade up and get him as opposed to passing on that talent.
Yeah, I mean, I sit there and I think about Brian Daboll, and I think about a guy like that who knows how to be around quarterbacks. And, you know, I know it's the seats are hot. I get that. You guys have been dealing with that. I dealt with that. Swear to God, just for your listeners, every day of my life, I don't care whether you're winning or not, short of winning a Super Bowl, you are hot all the time, especially. And I love Arthur Blank. He changed my life. But that guy is some of those, the owners in today's world, man, they are pressing all the time. So you have to be ready. You have to be ready for that. And making these big decisions on quarterbacks like this, these are huge decisions. And by the way, can I just mention this? As a GM, I don't care how you look at it, you are ultimately graded by your ability to acquire a quarterback, keep a quarterback, whatever your quarterback situation. You can do all these great picks down the road. You can be a expert in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round, fine, great, whatever all that is. If you haven't secured a quarterback and you don't leave your organization with a quarterback situation over your years for posterity or whatever it may be,
yep.
That's your legacy in this league. I think it's fascinating for some of my contemporaries that haven't had a chance to secure a quarterback.
Well, that's why Joe Douglas is gone. He got an all-pro corner, got a terrific receiver, you know, rebuilt components of the O-line, did a lot of good things, didn't get a quarterback, he's gone. Now, you talk about Arthur Blank and the incessant, you know, pressing of and pressure that you guys deal with. Every building's a little different. We thought you were going to get the Jets job, and we were talking to you before you came on air. I think I'm more interested in hearing what you thought about the Jets building. They didn't hire you. I probably would have. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. We said that on the air. Was it buttoned up? What was your impression of the Jets building?
Well, the Jets building, in my mind, I went, you know, of course, I went down and interviewed down in Palm Beach, right? So we weren't bringing those first rounds. We weren't being brought in to interview at the building. I know it well. I mean, personally have a great deal of respect for Jaime Eli. I mean, Jaime is very well respected in the league. He's a smart man, and he works well with his football people. By the way, that is always a very important thing, to make sure that your president is in lockstep in it, in as much as it is, right? Meaning they work together with the football people.
Yeah, but if you're not winning and you work together well, I mean, not trying to disparage Jaime, but what does he do? What is he doing?
Yeah, no, I don't want to back into that one. I guess my point is there are some, you know, when you go into a building that's held people for a long time, right? I mean, Jaime aside, right? I was thinking about some of the other people in that building. They've had people there for many, many years, 20 plus years, right?
Yep, too many.
Is that correct? Yeah, I think those are the kind of things when you're a general manager having an opportunity to come in, and I'm watching from afar with, you know, where Darren Mooji is, right? Coming from Denver, is Darren going to start, you know, is he going to have the opening to say, all right, I've spent 6 months here, and I'm going to see where the ups and downs and the positives and negatives are here and where the complacency is and make a move. I mean, I'm a hand raiser on that. I've never been a slash and burn guy. I'm going to get back to your question, but I'm a big believer. You go in, and if people aren't fits, it doesn't mean they're not good, doesn't mean they're not smart, but if they truly aren't in the best interest of making that team better, there has to be a good riddance time, and you can't walk around worried about everyone during that point. I think that's important. I think there were some really good people in place there. By the way, with Joe Douglas, I mean, to your point earlier, yes, there wasn't a quarterback, but they have some good football players. They also had some football players that left, as I understood, who maybe weren't necessarily good program people, right? So they moved on. I won't mention the positions. You guys probably know there was a couple really good players that ended up leaving that just weren't going to be a fit for that organization. They asked me a lot of questions, right? What would you do? Where would you go? Where would you go with the quarterback? You know, it's
the Aaron Rodgers.
Well, the Aaron Rodgers thing is so far gone now. You guys don't
but
even
want it.
Wasn't
when you were interviewed.
No, it totally was.
So how did they address that directly with you?
I mean, Woody Johnson and the group, and as you recall, that group was also Mike Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
And Rick Spielman were also in there. So there were a couple other people. So it was a driven. There was a football side. And there was also, you know, the ownership side. And the point blank was, what would you do with Aaron Rodgers? I mean, it was cut right to the chase on it. And are you looking for my answer? Or?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. No, look, my answer was, I did a lot of work on him. His ability to still throw off camber, get creative. He wasn't throwing deep. We get that. He can still win games, and he can still bring a team to above 500. That said, I told him this, and I said, however, it's time for him to move. Because of everything else that was going on, and I am a big believer in that. That quarterback, we know that. He sets the tone. And if it's kind of turning upside down within the organization, whatever that was, I wasn't in there. You guys were around it closer. It just felt like it was time. Let him go on somewhere else. Let him finish his career, and let's bring in fresh here. Let's bring in new focus and new approach here. I'll be interested to see how they play it out with the quarterback that they did bring in.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're in studio with Thomas Dimitroff right now. My two reasons why I wanted you to get the job. Number one, because I was very familiar with your work and I believed in you. Number two, I thought it was imperative that the Jets hire somebody that knows what the hell they're doing and has some experience, at least in one aspect, either the general manager or the head coach, because too many times we've seen rookie general manager, rookie head coach, and it just wasn't working. And maybe even more importantly than that, it would show me that the owner finally says, relinquish a little bit of control. Here's Thomas Dimitroff, who has a resume. I'm going to let him do what he wants to do. Do you feel like the Jets organization, I know they hired a first-timer in both again, but do you feel like they were ready to hire somebody with experience and maybe the owner stepped back a little bit, let you guys do your job?
It's a great question. I would say my own experience, and before I get into Woody Johnson and this very quickly, I do believe, you know, we all talk about why are GMs not getting second chances. It might be for a little later in the conversation. I have some strong feelings about it, but the net is you have to be a really good sort of personality mix with that owner, right? The owners, I always feel, have, and I'm not speaking for Mr. Mayer or Mr. Johnson on this. I would say, however, owners bond with the management people more because it's kind of what they know. They're kind of like general manager. I remember having those conversations with Arthur Blank. And again, great respect for Arthur, but Arthur would always say, yeah, I kind of know your world, but I don't know, and I have a high respect for coaches because they do something I've never done. I'm talking about the owners. So they can take some crap. I can't swear on here, right?
That's good. Yeah. But okay. Not more than that.
Crap is good.
Yeah.
They can take some of that pressing from their head coach and the swagger. I find it a little more difficult for them to sit down and get into banter with their general managers, just because it feels much more, that's business, that's management. Here's coaching.
That's interesting.
And so I guess that's one of the things I thought about. Now, back to, I think that they were, I thought they were ready.
Yeah.
I mean, I would never have interviewed. I swear to God, I would never have interviewed just to get my name back into it. No way. But I was told that there was a very good opportunity because the fact that they were looking for experience at every level, right? I mean, because, again, respectfully, that Mr. Johnson had never hired an experienced head coach or GM, right? In the tenure that he's owned the team, right? And since he's owned the team. So I thought that's really what they're going to do. And I thought, personally, and he had asked me, and it had been asked by the other teams, what's your sell point, T? You didn't win a Super Bowl back in 16. You guys failed in the very end, right? What was that? And my feeling has always been, if you go to an interview and you're saying, look, I can be a fixer, right? When we came into Atlanta back with the Michael Vick debacle, and after that, Mike Smith and I, we fixed it up to a point. We should have gotten to the Super Bowl, should have, could have, would have, whatever.
Well, you
all
did
that.
Get there, and you should have won it.
Yeah, and then we did it with Dan Quinn. Twice we did it. We resurrected twice. We didn't win a Super Bowl, but that's a big thing. Having been down in the pits and growing through that, that takes someone who has experience having
done
that.
By the way, as bad as it could possibly be for those people who aren't familiar, the head coach quit on the team, the quarterback, the face of the franchise thrown in prison, and yet for a franchise that never had back-to-back winning seasons in its history. Here comes Thomas Dimitroff. Who the hell is that? Oh, he's under the Patriots tree. Fine. Hires Mike Smith. Who the hell is that? And yet you guys go on and have sustained success and eventually getting to multiple championship games and obviously a Super Bowl.
And to your earlier point, I mean, you said it. I mean, Mike Smith won Coach of the Year 3 years out of five. Think about that. He had an amazing run. We don't need to get into why that ended up happening, you know, with the change. But the reality is Dan Quinn comes back in and he resurrects again, and we as a group resurrect again. So I think that's really important to know that there are people out there that have the experiences to do that. I'm hoping around the NFL that they are going back. There are some really good football men out there that are sitting in between here. You don't just need a 39-year-old all the time. You could talk to anyone in the league office and say, give me a 39-year-old and give me a 55-year-old. Like, the league needs a balance in this, in my mind, to have experienced and inexperienced, passionate football people in my mind.
I just want to get back to something here before we take a break, Thomas, because I know we're going to get more player-specific Jets, Giants needs. This is great. We've been looking forward to this, man. But if I don't do it now, I might lose it. Very quickly, back to the Woody Rogers thing. I think this is really important, because we've talked about this and around it, and I don't know the answer, and I need it now. Did you get the sense that Woody wanted you to say that you were done with Rogers? Because we've theorized here that he was going to be a little vindictive or whatever based on what Rogers said about his son and some other things. Like, was that your impression, that Woody wanted Rogers? Like, I don't think he was even open-minded to Aaron coming back. Did you get that impression?
The way that the questions were posed to me, along with Woody Johnson posing, was he sat there with a stone face and asked me point blank. He wasn't leading in and talking over in any way. So he was allowing me to report on what I truly spent my time looking at. And, you know, he could have stopped me right there and said, no, that's nonsense. I don't care to hear about all of his positives. But the reality is, it just needed to be known that he is going to go somewhere potentially and can still win some games. But again, it's not. And I don't think he was ever strongholding anyone.
Really? Okay.
I did not feel that.
You feel that. I got to respect it.
Yeah, and he was in the interview.
That's why I said I got to respect it.
There's a lot more we want to get to, and I want to get back to something you touched on about the owners and how that can impact or influence your decision in the draft. I think it pertains to the Giants. The Jets, yes, but to a lesser extent, certainly to the Giants. So there's a lot more we want to get to. So you touched on this, Thomas, and we were just talking during the break about a lot of stuff. Good insight here. But you touched on the impact of an owner. And a lot of the thought here was that the Giants ownership, when they hired Joe Shane, first-time general manager, Brian Daboll, first-time NFL head coach, was that the owner kind of forced Daniel Jones on them. You alluded to a little bit before where you took over in Atlanta. I wanted you guys to take Glenn Dorsey. It shows you how much I know, because I figured it was more stable. Build inside out, BT. That's what I talk about all the time. Uh-huh. Take Dorsey, not Matt Ryan, but where the franchise was at, maybe needed the quarterback. So you could get into a little bit of that. But where the Giants are at, owner forcing potentially Daniel Jones on them. Now they go into year four, still without their guy. How are we supposed to properly evaluate a regime where they have not pulled the trigger on drafting and developing a young quarterback yet?
I think it's really difficult to do that when you don't have the quarterback to develop, and it's not your driving force. That's what I think. I mean, look, we can go on and on about that, and I don't want to twist it around, so bring it back to me. But you're right. I mean, you would hope that they get an opportunity to show at all levels what they can do as a regime. The hard knocks thing that came out last year, and when we talk about the running back situation, you guys are so sick and tired of probably talking about it, although there's a couple legits out there right now. If you're not pulling a quarterback in this year's draft, and even if you're moving up into the early part of the second or early part of the first, and he's not the one that you can win with, I just wonder how much rope do you have in that? Is that the right word?
How much slack are you going to get? Yeah, sure.
I mean, how does that work? It's just one of those things that I'm kind of struggling with, because I never had to deal with that. We were building from day one with a quarterback. And by the way,
you didn't have that pick forced on you. You wanted Matt Ryan yourself.
Oh, no question about it. And the funniest thing in the world is Mike Smith and I were sitting. Here's a little draft day lore. We're sitting there. We're getting really close to the draft. And there's all kinds of banter going on there that Ozzie Newsome was going to move up for Baltimore and not take Flacco, but he was going to try to take Matt Ryan. Things are going like crazy. Mike Smith comes in to his credit. He's like, hold your water, bro. Hold your water. And I'm like, all right, I got it, man. I get a call from a notorious agent. This is a funny thing. This is kind of the other side. And the agent says to me, Thomas, do not cave in on this. They are not trading up. Don't believe the banter. So you can get information from all different routes. I finally take a deep breath. We don't do it. We pick Matt Ryan at 3 overall.
Right.
We could have moved
Jake
up.
Long, I think, went number one of the Dolphins.
Yeah. And remember, I mean, one of the best football men in the world, Bill Parcells, was against Matt. He was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take this tackle. And there were a lot of people that were pushing back on Matt Ryan at that time. But my point on it, when you're sitting there and everything is facing you, and this is a big draft for them, right? I'm talking about Joe and Dabo. I'm like, Dabo, these guys, they have a lot on their plate right now to make the right pick. If they don't have a quarterback this year and they have a hell of a pass rusher, does that get them a little less hot?
Well, here's where it might, and it leads me to this. There's a thought, can't prove it, but it's pretty much out there, that John Mara's become fairly meddlesome the last couple of years, okay? And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he told them, because he brought them back. I would not have brought them back. I've said that. But he did bring them back, and the last thing you want to do is bring them back and make them do something they don't believe in. So I think the wise thing would be, hey, guys, we might not announce this, but you're here for a couple of years. Do what you have to do the right thing. Don't do what you think I need you to do. Get me a star player. Find the quarterback when you find him. Do you think there's any chance behind the scenes that they were granted that, I don't want to say assurance, but a little freedom to breathe and not feel like the owner's saying, do this?
You know, when you say that, I always thought that I wished that I had that. Because, you know, it's so funny because I think a lot of people think that as a GM and as a head coach, you're given that little bit of security behind, as you're suggesting. It would be an ideal situation. I don't think it happens. Huh. I don't know if it does. Like, hey, man, you're on. I'm granting you the opportunity to be here, you know, after everything has gone down.
Yeah.
I'm paying you. You guys are smart football men. Make the right choice, right?
Jeez.
That's it can be pretty
rugged. Even if you
rugged.
Had success, because you, right out of the gate, you personally had success. You're working for a popular owner, but I thought a good, stable owner. I mean, I know he's made some crazy decisions, but you had success. You would think that would buy you some leeway. You felt pressure every single year?
Every single year. Now, let me just say this. Wow. The families, you know, the longstanding families, like the Maras and such, they have there's an element that they know about the game that is very different than, not that we don't have outrageously smart business people who are now buying teams, but it's just a different, it's different. I talked to my contemporaries who work for families that have been in a long time, very different than the hedge fund guys coming in. I'm not calling Arthur Blank the hedge fund guy.
Right.
He'll get on the phone and call me later. Like, I can't believe you called me a hedge fund guy. I'm not in any way, Arthur. I am just saying, like, the businessmen that are coming in have a different approach than the families. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
maybe
for sure.
I'm wrong there. Maybe there is a little bit more of that discussion on the side.
Well, the Giants used to be, along with the Yankees, the bastion for the city. Do you think that they have lost their way as a franchise?
I think the Giants, you don't want to talk about both New York teams right now, do you?
No, you could, yeah. Okay.
Weave it in however you want. Go ahead.
No, look, I don't. I think both of those organizations, let's just stay with the Giants for now. Like, I think it feels like it's not that far away. I think making sure that but we all know, get a damn quarterback in a situation where you can be consistent, you can grow, keep the quarterback healthy so he's not getting injured, and benefit off of the first contract. Make sure you have the right supporting cast. Get creative. Make sure that when you have that quarterback in, that you're very smart about how you're gonna run the offense with him. I mean, again, my experiences are, don't think you're gonna throw this quarterback 35 to 40 times as a first timer. Again, I loved what we did with Matt, again, retroactively.
Yeah, but also, you guys, it's very important here to note, not only that we referenced where you were coming from as an organization, you were one of the first to have success, along with the Ravens, with a rookie quarterback. Now it's become more common practice, draft them, throw them out there. When you were doing it in 2008, it was not the case. So you felt comfortable with your coaching, with your system, to have a quarterback start, or was that a necessity? Did you get lucky?
Oh, outrageous, because I'm a realist, and I am not a hand-sit-on guy. I mean, anything that I've ever done, I mean, I should have probably traded back more. I was known as Trader Thomas in that area, because all I wanted to do is get aggressive. This is a short-lived profession. Every one of these guys know that. The fact that some guys last 4, 5, 6 years, and they don't have a winning record is pretty amazing right now in the world of sports, right? It just feels like it's moving on fast. And I was always kind of pressed, like, I knew Arthur Blank. again, a really good man to work for and yet high pressure guy. And his point was, in 2 years, if you don't have this going in the right direction, you are hot as Haiti, and you had to be able to deal with it.
Yeah,
and you can't sit there and mope around and worry about it. That's not why you're paid.
I probably appreciate the transparency. At least you kind of know what he's thinking.
No
here.
Question.
So I wanted to ask you this, and I was saying this a few times over the last couple of days. Now, whether it's the Jets or the Giants or another team, we all think there's going to be some trades here tonight. Trade now, trading up, whatever it might be. And I was telling Sal, I'm saying, you know, one of the best things about a great executive is that they've got contacts around the league. So if I'm thinking about making a trade with, if I'm Team X and Team Y and I are engaged in a trade, I can theoretically call Team Z, who might impact taking a player that I might want, which will determine if I do the trade. And I could call other teams that I have friends with and say, hey, listen, I might do this trade with the Ravens or with the Steelers, but I'm looking to take this guy. Are you thinking about taking him here? And will you get that kind of honest information and lean on your contacts around the NFL to help make the decision of making that trade or not?
I'll start by saying this is why the old days, like our grandfather's days in this business where you would screw anyone to get ahead by an inch, is not the way it is anymore. Not saying there's not aggressive people like the Howie Rosens of the world are doing whatever they need to do to get things done. If you have a good working relationship with most general managers, most, and you've been on the up and ups, you know, again, reality speaking, that you're going to get deals done and you're going to be able to glean intel like that, which is really important for you to do your job. Every like 3 or 4 days or weeks before a draft, and definitely the 3 or 4 days before a draft, I would go up and down the line and reach out to my GM contemporaries. And I would say, A, are you interested in trading? B, if you're interested and you have any inkling you might, let's talk about sort of broad stroke compensation. Because if I say 2, 3, 4, and a 5, and you say no way, it's going to be a 1, 2, and a whatever, and we're on the opposite ends of the spectrum, there's no way we don't even need to waste each other's time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can do a lot of pre-work to get some really good information to see, where is it really worth my while? Now, that can all change in a heartbeat, right? There were times when guys would tell me, not interested, T, don't call me right now, I'll talk to you on the draft. But then they'll call me on the draft panicking, hey, I'm really interested in your offer before. Is it still on the table? Of course, a lot of times it's not. So yes, I think you can glean a lot of information. My point is, if you're a jackass,
I can say that.
You guys are going to be beeping me out left, right, side. But if you're not that guy that's respected around the league, you have a lot of people taking shots at you in a certain way. You can't get certain things done. So I just think it's really important to make sure you navigate appropriately and respectfully in today's NFL.
How much did you learn from Bill Belichick in your career?
I learned a great deal. I mean, at a lot of levels of what I brought to Atlanta, and then elements that weren't me that I decided not to bring there. I.e., you know, I remember when I first moved down to Atlanta, everyone's like, "Oh, this is going to be Patriot South, and Thomas isn't going to allow any of the media, et cetera, in." And I didn't learn that from Bill because that wasn't my personality. Bill's Bill, and no one is Bill, right? I've always said that. I learned to go in there and be the person I needed to be. I'll communicate where I thought it was necessary and not. I learned a ton. I learned a ton about the evaluating side of putting together a team that is your team, right? The guys like Bill Belichick do not really care what the wisdom of the crowd says, right? They're not worried about what the draft is saying. You need to draft this guy in the second, or don't draft him in the third. He's a fifth rounder. He did that with Mike Vrabel. Drafts him in the third round. I mean, you think about Bruschi and all those guys. They were good football players. He knew exactly what was right for his team. And even if they didn't do 7 things amazingly and did 3 really well for his scheme,
yeah,
it was worth it for him. I learned a lot of that because it's easy just to say best player ever. And there are a lot of really good football players who are smart and hard-driven, and they can be great football teams.
I need a one-word answer here. That's really good stuff on the Pats, too. More responsible for the Patriots' success, Belichick or Brady?
Oh, my gosh.
You got to give
good
me one,
question,
man.
BT.
Can't I say they both work off of each other?
You can, but then I'm going to ask you again. I need one.
If you had to pick one.
You can beat around the bush as long as you want. We need an answer here, Tommy boy. Come on.
Let me tell you.
Let's go.
There's no one better, hands you're looking for, than Tom Brady. And if you don't have a coach at the helm, seriously at the helm, I don't think it gets to where it got to.
But I think that your answer is more
Belichick.
Brady.
Oh, so
I heard
Belichick
Brady
in there.
Oh, you did.
Is it more important to have the head coach or the quarterback?
You can't win. Everything we do is talk about the quarterbacks. Now we're going to say it's about the coach.
Look, if the problem is you have to have a quarterback. I understand that. But if you don't have a coach that can monitor, you can fire that coach every few years.
Yeah.
And you're not going to fire the quarterback. So that is one thing that plays on your side. I am playing down the fence here. This doesn't feel really tough.
Come on, Thomas.
I'm sorry. The reality is both of those guys, my end-all, be-all answer, and you know this, is they both would not have had the success if not for either of them, each other. That's the way it is. That is the way it is.
Yeah, still.
It feels soft to you, right?
No, we're good. All right.
We'll move on.
I get it. We mix it up here, Thomas. This ain't Atlanta. All right, BC. Yes. Character. How much does that weigh in when you're going through the NFL draft?
Character's huge. You get 32 general managers around here right now going into this draft, and they will all say all of their, or the majority of their mistakes came off of their assessment of character, not their ability to evaluate whether the guy can get up the field or has athleticism or quickness or explosiveness. Too many guys make mistakes, and they think that they can change that player, change their approach, and they mature. A lot of mistakes made that way.
Who do you think, I know that you're with Carter, three at the Giants here, who do you actually think the Jets walk away with at seven?
I like an offensive lineman.
Me too.
Yeah.
Memba, the kid from Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that right? Memba? Why am I blanking?
Yes, Memba. Missouri,
yes.
Yep.
Yes, I have all these names on my mind.
It's a database that's full of a million 100%, names.
100%. I think they need that. I think it would be great for, how they're going to move forward. And with the quarterback situation, look, we didn't even talk about that. We didn't have time to talk about that. Does Fields come in? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's funny. I was just talking about maybe why the Jets should trade Breece Hall, and because I don't think they're going to pay him big money, and I think they have a pretty good running back room. The other two are good. They're young. They're cheap. They're dynamic. And Justin Fields is going to run a lot. How many times can you actually run the ball? I think that Fields will be functional, and I think that's why I also kind of want a tight end, because if he's running the ball well, he gets some action down the seam.
That's the other thing. This whole tight end thing, if there's any way the Jets could get creative and get that tight end, because, the Tony Gonzalez thing in my mind, the young quarterback, tight end, high percentage shot is always, my group always gets sick and tired of me saying it. It is the way it is. You can hit those underneath shots. It is such a good thing for the confidence of a quarterback.
Would you take a tight end in the top 10?
Yes, absolutely. Ooh. Absolutely.
You wouldn't have taken Kyle Pitts, like the guy, the knucklehead that they replaced with in Atlanta did.
That's a great point. There's a difference. When you take a Kyle Pitts, fantastic athlete, I get it. They knew all along, or I shouldn't say they knew. It was known all along by the masses that he was an outside guy. He's not a banger. You're not going to get a full banger all the time as a tight end. But here's what we say. You better get an F/Y, meaning you better have an 8. When you're drafting in the top 10, 8 being excellent, of all the skills and athleticism, run the routes, catch balls, you also better be at least about a 6, meaning good as a blocker.
Yeah.
You can't be way up here.
You can't be a 9 and a 2.
No way.
I got
no
you.
No way. But you also can't be a blocker over an F and be more of a plodding type.
Like Kyle Brady was, where the Jets picked him over Warren Sapp. I get you. Yeah. Give us a name. This is going to be a tough one for you. Give us a name that we all know is going to get drafted very early tonight. Every mock top 10 that you just wouldn't touch for whatever reason.
At all? Wouldn't touch at all.
You wouldn't take him under any circumstance. You think he's going to be grossly overrated from a talent perspective? Overdrafted, I should say. From a talent or from a character perspective? Or both?
I have everyone listening to this probably saying, how are you going to answer that, Thomas? Because I don't have an answer for that. Ooh. I really don't. There's no one. I think there are guys that I would move back into the second and third rounds, of course. No question about it. But to truly jettison someone from my thought process and say, this guy sucks, I can't stand him.
Okay.
I don't have anyone in this year's draft. I've had him before.
Well, fair enough. And if you I got you.
If I had a couple beers, like you said, another time, I might bring some of those out.
Oh, man.
And some of those
we got to get drunk, the three of us. Yeah, we could have the ball during the breaks here. I don't want you to leave. Screw Evan and Tiki. We're hanging out for another hour.
Unfortunately, we're not anywhere near this with the New York football teams. We are with the basketball a little bit, but you had to deal with this in Atlanta when you had success. You hired the right guy in Mike Smith. You mentioned a three-time coach of the year, had the quarterback, but he couldn't get you over the hump. Had to make a coaching change. You went to Dan Quinn. He did get you over the hump to the Super Bowl, blew the 28-3. Less about that, and I'll never forgive him for that. But when do you, as a front office executive, know that you need to make a change, even with a successful head coach, to try to bring in somebody else to get to another level?
I think you really have to have an acute understanding of what's going on in the building and the interaction, not only between that head coach and his players, but you start seeing the splintering of the relationship between the assistant coaches and then forever banter on the coordinator side. It just starts to build, and again, then that folds back over into the players, and it's just this never ending element. It's like this is not going to end good. And then when you see the insecurities start to fall in, and it happens with some of the best coaches out there, some of the very best and the toughest coaches. It just happens. We call it the golden handcuffs. I had them. Golden handcuffs are tough, man. You start making that money and you start, you know, the fame and fortune of putting together and the power of putting together a team. I laugh about coaches, man. They walk through a grocery store. They're waiting in grocery lines and they're like wanting to lead the grocery line. That's how jaded they can be at times. That's a tough thing on the ego.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's complicated. I think you have to be very closely focused on that element.
Just a football one, because you've been around the game forever and I respect what you do and where you've been. Comparable talent, meaning they both have the same rosters. You mentioned Belichick before. Belichick and that team and the same roster versus Parcells. Who wins the game? Which coach are you going with?
He's talking about, just so I'm clear, you're talking about...
From a coaching perspective, meaning if they had similar talent.
Yep.
Do you think a Belichick team with that talent or a Parcells team with similar talent wins? Who do you believe in more, basically?
Who do I believe? I would not say who I believe in more, but I would say Bill Belichick. I'd take Bill in that. And that's why
the answer's Parcells.
Now, come on
here, Tommy.
Dude,
boy,
you answer the question.
No, but it's a great answer. But what I'd say is, in my mind, Bill Belichick is still present. I know he's down there in North Carolina, and we can talk about all
that. At the sorority house, you mean?
Yeah. But what I'm saying, and I mentioned this, I don't think there is another coach, and this is it. It's perplexing to me that is still available that could get you closer to a Super Bowl in 3 years than Bill Belichick. Categorically, I believe
wow,
that.
Okay.
Not saying that Bill Parcells could, because Bill's a great coach. I am just saying.
I got you.
Present, my own interaction.
Yep.
And, that's what I'd say.
Thomas, we appreciate your time very much.